Well, welcome everyone to another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, the Tech Doctor, along with Allison Hartley. How are you doing this time, Allison?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. We're recording in the evening, which is a bit unusual for us. But this is a really special podcast because we're going to turn the tables just a bit here.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge onto our co-host, Allison, along with her husband, Jeremy Hartley. And Jeremy, it's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Welcome and thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you, Robert. This is going to be fun for me, as we'll get into a little bit later on. I've done some podcasting, my own podcasts over the years, as a host. So this is going to be nice because actually I get to have everyone else do all the work, and all I got to do is talk. So it's beautiful.
Exactly. Well, since you told us that much about yourself, that you've done podcasting before, back up a little bit and make it a little more global and tell us just a bit about who you are and what you've done, aside from the fact that you obviously managed to win Allison's heart, which we'll get into a bit later. But tell us about who you are, Jeremy.
Okay, so I am totally blind and have been since birth, and I am 38 years old now. And I'm actually living here in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, Northern California, native Californian, proud to say. And I have, over the years, just a little short bio, over the years, I have done a lot of things that a lot of folks out there have done. I used to wrestle in high school, and then I blew my knee out in wrestling, so I began to announce for them. I sort of created my own announcing wrestling job at the time when I was in high school.
Okay, now hold on just a second. How does one blow their knee out in wrestling? I mean, I could see doing it running or walking or something, but wrestling?
Well, in amateur wrestling, it is very much a leverage type sport. So if you are, at the time, I think I was, you know, wrestling in the 120, 125, 130 pound weight class. And you're going out there and you're wrestling. There's, you know, it's all leverage moves and holds and things. And if a guy, which is what happened to me, a guy just kind of shifted his weight a little bit and I didn't anticipate it. And so, you know, down I went and, out the knee twisted.
Okay.
So I mean, it's, and of course I was dumb enough back then to get back on it after about 2 weeks and blew it out again later on. And so after the second time, I decided, you know what, I actually would rather spend the rest of my life walking.
Yeah.
So I wrestled for about 5 years and it was fun. It was very enjoyable. The whole team effort and stuff. It was very cool. I learned an awful lot, especially that a lot of blind kids don't get the opportunity to learn because it was not a blind wrestling school or anything like that. It was just public school, me, the only blind wrestler there. And so it was an education for everybody. But boy, they really got educated in a hurry when I started as the announcer, announcing the takedowns and announcing who was going to be wrestling next. And then that led to the track coach wanting me to announce track, which then later led to the football coach wanting me to announce football. So it really became this, you know, this kind of cool thing that I sort of created myself. And I'd always had a love of sport and broadcasting. And this was back in the 90s, you know, early 90s. And it was, like I said, a lot of fun. As I got older, technology, especially I got the technology bug like a lot of us out here, I think, started out on an Apple II GS and with the Echo speech synthesizer and
good old Echo.
And all the homegrown software that APH put out at the time, Pro Words and Term Talk, and you know all these different things I can't think about now.
Sure.
And they also had this great thing when you finally got out of the whole the screen reader on the software, you actually had it was called Text Talker GS, which Larry Skutkan wrote years ago, and you could actually play mainstream games at the time. You could run Apple Works. You had to do a lot of fiddling to get it ready, but you could do it. So that was my love of technology kind of got started there. And then as I got a little bit older, graduated from high school, got into reading machines, the old Kurzweil reading machine. I was introduced to that. Of course, that came out in the mid-70s. So I got it when it was basically the county, Sonoma County Office of Education said, we have this big thing. It's like, you know, 120 pounds and we don't know what to do with it. I think it reads documents. And of course, that was all anyone needed to say to me, you know, as a ninth grader. I said, just bring it to get it to my house.
Sure.
I'll figure it out somehow, you know. And so they did. They took a moving van and dropped it off with all of the documentation. They actually had the documentation. And back then, those Kurzweil reading machines distinguished themselves because they were the first machines that actually did OCR.
Yep.
Yeah, and they ran on tape, so they weren't discs; they were actually tape.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd put the tape in, and it would scan a line at a time, and read it, and then scan another line. And Lord help you if you encountered a picture, because every time the thing would shake violently, and you'd have to type in some prehistoric commands to get it past the picture, and do this report feature to read columns and all kinds of good stuff. But it helped me out a lot through high school. Actually, it was the great door opening. And the reason I tell this story is because this kind of leads me into what I did shortly after high school. I got a Reading Edge, which was a major upgrade at the time from the Kurzweil reading machine. It was fantastic. And so my local technology vendor in Santa Rosa, California at the time needed somebody to train a couple of people on this Reading Edge because he just didn't have the time. And he had shown it to me. And after about 2 minutes, I was beginning to show him features that he didn't even know existed, and he was the vendor of the product. So,
yeah.
So that's probably a familiar story.
Similar to some extent to what you'd used on the original Kurzweil machine.
Exactly, exactly. The OCR was quite a bit better.
Absolutely.
I started doing that. I started working as a trainer on Reading Edge machines for this vendor. And then, of course, the more I read about Reading Edge and how it could interface with a IBM PC, and I thought, ooh, IBM PC, I wonder how accessible those are. And so I did a little research and learned about some of the screen readers. Vocalize was really hot at the time, and ASAP, and you had Flipper, and you had some other screen readers at the time. So I decided, you know what, I'm gonna try to get on board here. And so in about 1994, got my first PC, and pretty much never looked back. Was on the internet shortly thereafter, and of course, as you know, the internet back then was the World Wide Web was just a baby, pretty much, and there was a lot of learning going on by everybody. But it was nice because most of it was text based anyway, and of course, you still had the bulletin board systems, the BBSs, and stuff like that. So you had a neat little. And AOL was just starting up at the same time and relatively accessible for Windows 3.1. And so I got involved in that. And then a year or two later, I found myself at an internet service company in Oakland, California, going to pay my bill. And as I was standing there ready to pay my bill, my roommate and I just decided, you know, let's just take a break and go down to the office and just pay our bill directly because we wanted somewhere to go. And so we went down there, and as I'm standing there, I'm realizing that this person doing tech support was absolutely atrocious. And I'm thinking, I've only had 2 years of computer experience and only 1 year in Windows experience, but yet, you know, this person's giving completely wrong advice. And so I waited until she hung up and I said, yeah, next time that happens, you know, you can tell them to do this and this and this. It was using Netscape or something like that. And this guy taps me on the shoulder and he's like, hey, that was really good. I like that. And I said, oh, do you work here? And he goes, well, I guess so. I own the place.
Oh, yeah.
And so next thing I knew, I'm going in to pay the bill, and next thing I know, I have a job there.
Excellent.
And, and so I'm, at that time, I'm working in technical support using ASAP for DOS because that was really the best monitoring screen reader for terminals, especially on intranet
at the time.
And so so I did that for a year and came back home because I was also involved in music very heavily at that time. I was playing in a couple of bands at that particular time, doing trumpet and keyboards and vocals in various Bay Area bands. And so I thought, I got to do something other than, you know, just try to scrape along playing music. And I really had no direction at that point. I'd kind of finished school and I was just like, man, what am I going to do? And I had the brilliant or foolhardy or some kind of idea to start my own internet service provider business. Now, this was in 1997. And I knew very little about how to do it. I just I knew that I knew enough to learn how to do it. And so I just buckled down, bought all kinds of books from O'Reilly and Associates, you know, the technical book leaders of you know, the internet revolution, essentially, and read with my Reading Edge machine, no less, how to basically set up an ISP. And we got a little bit of capital, invested, got some investors, went to the Service Corps of Retired Executives, met with them, got a business plan together. My brother and I did this. As it turned out, he kind of was the books and the bookkeeper, and I sort of did everything else. Mm-hmm. It was a two-person operation. And when it was all said and done, we had we were involved with doing website hosting, domain hosting, email server hosting. And because I wanted a reason to do it, we also implemented streaming audio and streaming video, which back in 97, that meant using the Real server, Real Audio server, which you didn't have places like Live 365 or even Shoutcast or any other thing. So you had to run them direct, and they charged you to yeah. run them. Mm-hmm. per user, and it was quite a deal, but it was my excuse to want to get in more into broadcasting and stuff. I figured, you know, me as the business owner, if we hustled enough streaming audio and video services, they're going to need someone to set it up for them.
Right, exactly.
So actually, as it turned out, that part of the dream did come true because I ended up flying all over the country. We got a lot of out-of-state customers and helped them set up some things and even did some video and audio webcasts and everything like that. So it was, like I said, a really nice experience. Around the year 2000, I decided to call it quits on that. At that time, I had been basically playing music as well as being the system administrator. So you'd come back from gigs. You know, I'd come back from gigs, and you get these angry emails and voicemails why someone's email server isn't working. And so you'd get home at 2 and 3 in the morning, and then have to stay up until 7 or 8 trying to figure out read email logs. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. And the music thing was really taking off at the time. And so we sold the business to another online business, which is still around, actually. So it turned out to be a good investment, a good idea. And so did the music thing for many, many years. And then all through this time after the business, I was called upon to do technology training with the same vendor I talked about earlier. But then later on, that company ended up going out of business, and then I took a job as a technology trainer consultant with another business. Did that for about 7 years. Actually was working for until last year. I was actually working for two companies, actually in competition of one another.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, which was really kind of funny because they were allowing me to do it. But, you know, with clenched jaws and
yeah.
clenched, you know. But it was really the only way to make any kind of money and to stay competitive. But now that's all done. And as seemed to be the case with me, when I changed careers, I tend to really change careers. Now I'm working for a company out of San Francisco called the SSB BART Group. And what they do is – website testing and consulting for making their for companies helping companies make their sites more accessible. And of course, we can get into that a little bit later. But we've been working with a lot of mainstream companies that a lot of people would know that I can't really mention because of these non-disclosure agreements.
Right.
But I can get, you know, into some detail. The upshot is that this is a great time. And people should really be looking forward to sites as well as apps, as well as other types of entertainment becoming more and more accessible in the next couple of years. And it's not just because of lawsuit threats. There's some legislation being passed now that is going to make it a lot more, well, it's necessary for these companies to actually comply and actually make their products more accessible. So it's a good time for it. We just might have to wait just a little bit for it, but we're already starting to see a bit of an upswing. Especially our company is just seeing a major upswing in business right now. So it's good for everybody.
Well, that's excellent, and it's really an exciting time to be a blind person who's using the technology. Things are moving along at a very rapid pace. And even on this podcast, we keep interviewing developers who have made their apps accessible and doing exciting things. And it's just it's a great community to be involved in right now.
It keeps us nice and busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it keeps changing so rapidly that if you blink, you'll miss something.
Yeah.
And, you'll miss something if you go to sleep too soon at night, wake up in the morning and there'll be three announcements about
like
something.
Me missing the accessible Kindle launch almost.
You didn't miss it for long.
No.
You got on board within a few minutes there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, wow, that's really interesting. And especially, I parallel some of that early history with the Kurzweil machines and all that. I mean, I'm quite a bit older than you. When I was in an undergraduate school when the Kurzweil came out and got involved in doing some testing and writing some articles. I was one of the first people to actually interface the old tape-based VersaBraille with the Kurzweil.
The VersaBraille.
So you could you could plug it into the serial port on the Kurzweil and actually get refreshable Braille that had just been scanned by the Kurzweil, and that was really pretty neat for the time. So
that is really cool. I mean, I forgot about the VersaBraille. They actually, my favorite piece of equipment, and I want to get my hands on one, is the Opticon.
Yeah,
and I was trained on how to use it. And I got so good at it, I was reading a lot of people's handwriting and, doing all kinds of cool stuff that you still can't do with your OCR packages. And but one of these days, I'll pay an exorbitant amount of money
$1,000
to get one that's left. You know?
Yeah, I was studying psychology, and I remember reading a Carl Rogers, Barry Stevens book called On Becoming a Person with the Opticon. So,
oh, wow. Nice.
I sure do remember doing that. I didn't read it real fast, but I was able to read it fast enough to successfully get through the book.
Well, the trick to the Opticon always is trying to find, you don't read, you read a letter at a time, but you actually kind of guess what's going to be happening.
Yeah, you learn to speed along and do the context thing.
Right.
We do the same thing, I think, in a lot of ways with Braille as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I do. One of the things that I haven't done in a while, but I did do a couple of years ago, there was an audio game for any blind gamer out there called Entombed, and I was the voice of the intro. And I did the intro just in my little studio in the house. And, of course, that was a Braille script that I read from. And, if you listen back to it, you'll never know I was reading a Braille script. And I did exactly, I put my Opticon training to use at that point. And it just the anticipating of what's coming. And sometimes I anticipated a little too incorrectly. And I wish I still had those outtakes.
Because some of them bloopers.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to make a mistake, make it big, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Allison, I'd like to have you pick up this story a little bit. At somewhere along the way, you met up with this Jeremy guy, obviously. How did that all come about?
Well, the really cool thing about mine and Jeremy's story is that by all rights, even in the age of today's digital world and technology, we really never should have met, but we did anyway. So it was clearly meant to be. I was living in Pennsylvania, going to school at the University of Pittsburgh. I'm about to start my last year of my master's degree in rehabilitation counseling. And I'm also a musician. I'm a singer. And I was at that time trying to set up my home recording studio. And I did not know a gosh darn thing about setting up my own home recording studio. So a friend of mine, and he'll never really know the depth of the part he played in my life, but a friend of mine, or maybe he will, if he's listening, hi, Eddie, a friend of mine recommended that I join the MIDI-MAG list, which is a popular list for blind and visually impaired musicians. And I wrote a very general email just explaining what I wanted to do. And just kind of for kicks, as an afterthought, I put my website, which is still under my maiden name, Allison Mervis, MERVIS.com, on the bottom of the email. Now, a lot of the music on there now is outdated, but 5 years ago, it wasn't quite so outdated. And it just so happened that the first person to write back to me was Jeremy. He had listened to some of my music, really liked it. At that point, he was doing a podcast for blind musicians and wanted to possibly interview me for that podcast. Now, funnily enough, that interview has never
happened yet.
Yeah, and the podcast is actually no more, but I digress. Because I was like, well, sure, you know, let's talk about it on Messenger and everything, because I, in my woman's heart, there was something about this guy writing to me, which, and I'm never usually like this, but I was like, ooh, I like this guy. There's something here. We call it woman's intuition. Call it little magic fate. Yes, a little magic. I was just like, and I remember having a stern talk with myself, like, Allison, you've exchanged one email with this guy. You're acting like a fool, you know? And it actually ended up turning out really well because, you know, we got to talking on Messenger, realized we had a lot of things in common, emailed each other pretty much incessantly for the next few weeks, and then progressed to talking on Skype. And we realized really very quickly that we had something very special and that it was way bigger than the both of us.
Wow.
And it was really wonderful and scary and crazy all at once, because neither of us had really experienced this depth of feeling. I had a lot of previous relationships that did not go well. Jeremy had really not had a lot of previous relationships. And both of us at the time when we met were just like, well, to heck with relationships. We're going to just, you know, stay single for a while. But immediately almost we realized that wasn't what we wanted anymore.
Right. Know? As soon as you say that, that's about when it's going to change.
Yeah. The minute you right, stop looking, yeah. You find the person.
Yeah.
And so we did the long distance thing for over 3 years because I had started to work for the state of Pennsylvania to gain some job experience. And we did a lot of flying back and forth. And when I think of how much money we spent, it's all worth it now. But it was becoming very expensive, though, the flying back and forth and the taking of vacations. And at the time, I was still applying for jobs in California as well. And a long-distance job search, if you have never conducted one, it's hell on earth. It's really it's really not very feasible because it's really not possible to make the kind of connections that you want to make when you're 2,000 plus miles away.
Exactly.
So in early 2011, we seriously started talking about me just moving out to California, quitting my job and moving to California. And that is what I did. And it was definitely a transition at first because neither of us had ever cohabitated with a partner before. So it was definitely different, but we got through it. And I'd say it's turned out pretty well because in October of 2012, I was already working and everything, and we ended up getting married. So it was very quick. Got engaged in August of 2012 and married in October. And we've been very happy. And I recognize that, you know, what I did in moving out and leaving my job was a huge risk for a lot of different reasons. But I'd say it's paid off.
Well, it sounds like it. And it sounds like everything has just really kind of fallen into place. And Jeremy, I'm curious, you know, from your side, obviously it has worked out great, but were you on the same page with Allison from the very beginning? Did you sort of feel that magic, that attraction and all that?
Well, I did, but as you know, as she'll even tell you, there were many times I didn't know quite what to do with it. You know, it's like it's like if you go back to the Harry Potter books, you know, and he's introduced to magic, and it's like, okay, you have all this magic now. Now, what do you do?
Right?
It has to be harnessed somewhere, and that was the tough thing for me because for many, many years, I was just living by myself. You know, I had basically a small house to myself. You know, it was just myself and my little baby bird, my Conyer. And so it was just the bird and I. Mm-hmm. and then she moved in. And honestly, it did take some transitioning for both of us. For different reasons. But I don't know, as anything that's worth having is worth working for. And so we worked through it, and it's always an adventure. You know, the thing is, she still says that I'm 80% bachelor. You know,
I tease him all the time. Just some of the ways he does things, I'm like, yeah, we got to get the rest of that bachelor out of you.
that is funny. It's fascinating to me how we as human beings will have these events in our lives where, you know, intuitively somehow we'll just realize that we're going to step out there and take the kind of risk that we maybe normally wouldn't take or maybe hadn't taken before. And this, it sounds like a real example of that. I mean, it's not a trivial thing to move from Pennsylvania to California, or not a trivial thing to start living with someone after you've been a bachelor for a lot of years. So it's just kind of interesting how that came together like that.
Well, and I think for me too, on a subconscious level, it's kind of something I don't, you know, ever usually really talk about. But in 2009, my best friend, who was closest to me than any brother that anyone could ever have, committed suicide, and it was a shock to the system. And of course, Allison and I had been together for about a year. And I went through a period of time where I just shut down, you know, physically and emotionally, just, you know, that's it. Yeah. You know, there's nothing, you know, and she stuck with it. And that's in, you know, let me deal through with my stuff. And
sure. Not always well, but I let him deal with
it. Right. Well, there's no way to do that well. It's just a process that you have to go through, and it's got good days and bad days and ups and downs and everything in between.
Yeah. So, but I think it in some ways it strengthened us because, you know, I certainly wasn't in a right frame of mind to be perfectly honest. And then when I was pulling all my things, then she wasn't, you know, in her right frame of mind.
And so right. Because part of me knew that he was going through this thing and he had to deal with it. And part of me's like, why aren't you talking to me?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was an internal struggle for me too. But, you know, I feel like we got through that. I feel like we can get through pretty much anything at this point.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was a big, you know, it sucks that it had to happen, but you know, it did, and so it. I think that changed the course of events as well, because it forced something to occur. You know, forced something to happen. It was either we were going to deal with it or we weren't.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and so you have to either climb the mountain or decide you're not going to climb it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you all decided to climb it, and it's turned out great. You know, it's exciting to hear that story. It's fun to learn about that. You know, and I know from working with Allison that, you know, she's really, really quick to pick up on the technology and shares a lot of those traits that you talked about, Jeremy, about, you know, just being able to get a good grasp on it in a hurry. And a really neat thing that you all share in common, I think, is just that ability to really understand this technology.
Yeah, you know, we both use Android, we both use iPhone, we both have Macs, we both have PCs.
I gave you my PC, you have mine now.
No, but I probably have about seven of them kicking around here somewhere, if I looked hard enough. You know, I've had, you know, experience with all that stuff, and so is she, and I think it's... So when we talk about certain aspects of technology, we can bounce ideas. If we're having issues with technology, we can bounce ideas and we come at it from a different perspective and sometimes a little bit different perspective. But it, the result is always the same, you know.
Yeah.
And so it does. It works out. Works out a lot, and you know, she really wants to, you know, keep her foot in the tech, you know, technology, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, this is what a great time, you know. And I used to train people, and I think people would be, you know, a little hesitant about learning this new technology. I said, man, this is the greatest equalizer ever.
Yeah.
You can't think of anything that's a better equalizer. I mean, anything you could possibly want to learn, anything you could possibly want to experience, you know, it's all there.
It's all there
and it's right at your fingertips, and you just need to take the time. You know, it's funny. You get out of it what you put into it. And that's the thing that I've always told people is, you know, you get people that are, a lot of my clients were rehabilitation clients or state agency clients who'd never had to pay the bill. And so you'd get a lot of people that were saying, oh, yeah, I'll practice how to do the computer. And they wouldn't practice for a week. And then you'd show up for a week and they wouldn't know anything other than what they did. You know, you really have to kind of not necessarily pay your own way, but you've got to invest your own time if you're going to do it. And that's the one thing that Allison does is she invests her time. It's blood, sweat, and tears in another kind of form.
Sure.
It's, you're giving up some of your social life. You're giving up some other time that you would spend doing something else to learn this technology. But it's, you know, it's all for the better.
Your point's a good one, you know, and I discovered that really early on for some reason. And I can't explain why, but the three of us, we have a real passion for the technology and a real willingness to learn it and put the time into it. And it's not, you know, like a terrible chore for me. It's a joy to because I see how it levels the playing field, or at least moves in the direction of leveling the playing field with my sighted colleagues at work and so forth. But when I was at the University of Florida as a doctoral student, one of the things, I got a graduate assistantship and I set up a computer lab to train people at the university and the community who were blind and visually impaired actually to use the Apple IIe. And, you know, I discovered quickly that most of the people that came into the lab just didn't share the passion that I shared. They could sort of take it or leave it. And if it was too difficult to learn, too many commands to memorize, it's like, you know, this is just not really working for me, or this is just not worth it. I'll just go back to doing, I'll get my mom to write these letters for me, you know, like she's always done. It's not worth it. And I began to realize that a lot of that, honestly, is that for whatever reason, people just hadn't developed that work ethic, that self-esteem, that willingness to stick with it. And that's a huge problem that we have in the, I guess, with people in general, but it seems especially with people with disabilities.
I agree.
Until we're able to overcome that, there'll be an awful lot of people who will never find the courage to try a touch screen, for example.
Let me just kind of give a story here on this, because what you're saying is absolutely right. When I got my first PC, and even so far back as a reading machine, I didn't care about schoolwork. I didn't care about Word Perfect or anything like that. I wanted to be able, strangely, as silly as this sounds, I wanted to be able to communicate with my friends in high school and in college and so on, and the other friends I had. about what was going on in the local sports scene
yeah.
and the news and right. things like that. And so that became more of a situation. Okay, I'm going to get on this PC. I know I can get on the internet. Okay, that's the first goal, right? So learn anything that you can having to do with that. Okay, you get on the internet. What's the first thing you do? Well, you just jump around, and they had the worldwide virtual library, and they had a couple of other things you could jump off. They would jump off portals. I guess my point to all this is having goals in mind, no matter how silly they are. I was working with a client who just wasn't getting this technology at all, just not spending any time. You knew it was just, you know, boring her to tears.
Right.
And one day I said, okay, we're going to step away from the computer. All we're going to do is we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about what interests you. And she kind of, you know, looked at me as a blind person looks at another blind person, which, you know, whatever, you can draw your own conclusions on that. But looked at me and said, I don't know if I have any interests.
Yeah.
And I said, ah, okay. So I kind of fleshed it out. And I said, well, what kinds of things, if you ever wanted to learn something, what kinds of things would you ever want to learn about? And she came up with a little list. I said, come up with a list of, you know, two things or three things. I can't remember what it was. And she came up with this list. And I said, okay, I don't expect you to do a thing. I want you just to sit here and kind of watch the show. And so I began to do some searching and go on the web and punch up some things and some articles of things that she was interested in. And then the next thing she's telling me is, oh, so I can do that? And I can, oh, I just found another thing I wanted to learn, you know? And then she goes and she tells her, you know, her son or something at the house there. And then they were, you know, doing it. And it became a family deal, a family affair. They were all helping each other out. And then I show up there a couple weeks later and she's going all around. She's reading the New York Times and she, you know, just doing things that she never thought that she'd ever be able to do. And I think that is the key, as we said before. You get into it, you get out of it once you put into it.
Well, you were very wise as a trainer to sit down and find out what her passions were, because for some of us, for the geeks among us, you know, the technology a lot of times can actually be in itself interesting enough, and it can yeah. be a passion within itself. But for right. an awful lot of people, my wife is one of them. She could care less about the technology. She doesn't want to know how it works or doesn't want to know the ins and outs of any of it. But yeah. she wants to get on Facebook and communicate with her family. So she mm-hmm. is willing to tolerate the technology because it and learn a little bit about it, enough about it to do what she wants to do with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, her passion is not the technology. Her passion is Facebook. I mean, if I start talking to her about how you do it or why it works the way it does, you know, her eyes glaze over and she's 1,000 miles away. She's on the Jamaican island somewhere in her daydream, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, we've kind of learned over the years, just as jokingly, just, we just don't go there because that's not where she's at. And I don't think people really understand that. At least a lot of people, a lot of geeks don't really understand that enough. And that's why, you know, we try to combine on this podcast the psychology elements of it along with the technology elements, because when you bring the two together, then you potentially can reach people at a place where they can feel something and learn something at the same time. That's really what yeah. this is all about.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to get the most success and the most everybody kind of remembers where they were at the first time it actually hit them that, oh, wow, I can actually do something on this. And then it didn't just become the, you know, the big albatross around the neck that you had to do. You know, it's like the little kid having to take piano lessons when they could care less about playing piano.
Right, right.
It's, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's like the greatest piano players, they it's a part of their life, and for whatever reason, they make it a part of their life. And that's what technology. You don't have to be a geek to make technology a part of your life. You just have to know where to put it.
I think that's true today, and especially true today. Apple has demonstrated to us that
yeah.
that you don't have to be a geek to really enjoy using their products. It wasn't true when you and I started out, you know, 20 20 years ago, you had to understand the ins and outs of the RS-232 serial interface.
And you had to be five steps ahead of every sighted counterpart that you ever spoke to.
You did. You absolutely did. And that's the reason that you got that job at doing tech support at that company, because you had done your homework when you went in there to pay your bill, and you ended up with a job.
Right.
And you know, that's great when it can work like that. And it's not so necessary to go down that road today. I don't think. I certainly look at my 20-year-old son, you know, who right now is in his bedroom editing a movie that he made, because he's going to submit it to South by Southwest and try to get one of his movies going somewhere. He's editing a movie on his MacBook Pro, and you know, he's using Adobe Premiere or something like that, and he hasn't really had to learn anything about the workings of the Mac, just had to learn how to use the software. That's all you have to do these days. And so it's kind of cool to see how things have advanced, and yet at the same time, you know, he calls me and says, "Dad, why won't my thumb drive write to my Mac?" And it's like, you don't realize that your thumb drive is formatted in FAT32, and you're gonna have to reform it. Right. You know, into.
You don't have to. There's an app for that.
Yeah, there's an app for that. But you're gonna at least have to know about the fact that there's an app for that, or you're gonna have to know something about the workings of the technology to even begin to figure out why it won't do what you want it to do. You know, and so
right.
There are. I guess what you really need is just a dad or a Jeremy or an Allison or someone you can call that can answer the question for you. So everyone, yeah. Everyone who doesn't want to know too much about the technology just needs to make friends with a geek, right?
Right. We should start an organization, Befriend a Geek.
Exactly.
I've gotten a little less. I used to be a real I was known as the stickler, because I would always get really uptight if somebody would say, you know, would not call a button a button or a radio button, you know, when they're trying to describe what's happening.
Right.
They'll describe things in wrong terms.
Sure.
And you go and you try to figure it out, and you're going, okay, that wasn't anything how you described it.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm always, you know, trying to instill, because, well, first of all, as a blind and visually impaired person, if you're using JAWS or VoiceOver or System Access or WindowEyes or any of the screen readers or NVDA, you're going to have to know a little more terminology.
Sure.
It's just part of the game, and it's very important. As I say, you know, listen to your screen reader knows best sometimes. You know, it's one of those things where some people say, "Oh, it's too chatty. It's too verbal. It's too," I said, "You just got to learn how to filter."
Right.
You know, so everybody just needs to get their filter in place, but you don't learn that unless you spend some time and you kind of get to understand what the screen reader is saying. Because most of your problems that you might have on again, just speaking in terms of a blind and visually impaired user, is a lot of times you can get yourself out of trouble if you know what's going on, if you hear the controls being talked about, if you hear the various things. Now, of course, on websites and things, there's a little bit different perspective. That still is the most demanding terminology-laden thing, but you know, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, there's a lot you have to know to be able to navigate successfully.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not necessarily easy for everyone to learn that information and to really know how to discriminate between a checkbox and a radio button. And,
right.
And so, yeah. You know, because people don't necessarily, that's where the time and effort comes into play, is to read the manuals and study the information and learn what the different classes of icons are and things like that. But, you know, most people these days certainly don't take the time to do that until they find themselves stuck or trapped, and then they may have to dig into it deeper. But that's okay with me, because I think we're honestly moving out of the T-model stage of computing, where you don't have to know exactly how to crank it and put water in it and change the tires all the time. But we can pretty much get in now and just drive it. We're not quite there yet, but we're moving in that direction.
Well, and we're talking about, too, with the web, we're starting to see the land of widgets So, you know, all of the various widgets popping up that are trying to look like applications.
Yeah.
And then you see the use of Aria and the use of all of these different web accessible things that are, some are standards and some are recommendations. But like I said, it's an exciting time because accessibility is trying to keep up. Assistive technology is trying to keep up more at a rapid pace. I know you remember back in the days of when Windows would come out, you'd have to wait. I remember when Windows 95 came out, I was elated to find a copy of Slimware Window Bridge, which I had never heard of in my life, but it was the only screen reader that worked on Windows 95
at the time. Yeah, and fortunately, ScootCon came out with ASAW shortly after that. And
That's right. It
did work with Windows 95, and it didn't stay around forever, but it did work. And I remember one weekend I went up to his house, and right when he was working on ASAW, and just spent the whole weekend immersed with him in Windows 95, and it was really fun. We really had a good time.
ASAW was a very good screen reader, actually. It was very good for its time. It did some things that no other screen reader has even managed to do yet.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was, you know, direct handling and various things that were going on. It did some things that were just fantastic, except the little dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee sound if you had the demo. That was rather annoying. But
yeah. Well, Larry's a great programmer, and if he ever retires from APH, we might see him do some more cool things. I wouldn't be surprised in terms of programming.
iOS, Larry.
Yeah, he's got a great mind. I still have some of his Apple APH Apple training discs.
Yeah.
Still kicking around.
I think we both do, but we actually both have Apple 2GSs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
They still work too.
We play Lemonade Stand and we play Oregon Trail. We have a good
one. Wow, I wish I had one.
It's a very silly, fun place at the Hartley Hall.
Yeah, they still work, and the discs still work. Surprisingly, there's actually a lot of places now you can get the discs online, and so if you have the right software to transfer it, you could still buy the blank floppies.
Yeah, you can buy the blank floppies on eBay.
Oh, that is cool. I didn't know that. I don't have any Apple II machines anymore. I wish I did. I wish I hung on to mine, if for no other reason, just for nostalgia. But, you know, when you're young and you're just getting – I was just getting started in my job, and I thought, technology's moved on, you know, and I didn't
well,
hang on to
them. We bought these later on.
Yeah.
I actually bought mine from a friend of mine who was selling his, and then we found another one on eBay.
Yeah, and somehow found another Echo on eBay, which was just another meant to be type of thing, I think, because usually you don't see an Echo on eBay.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, that was incredible.
You all really did luck out there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So. One thing that you know, my wife and I and son do and have done all our lives together really is play music together, knowing that both of you all are into music. Do you all do any of that together?
You know, seeing as how we're both musicians, you'd think that we would, but at this point, we've just both been really busy.
Yeah.
So, but we do, and I am, like, kicking his butt over here to get back in contact, especially now that we're, like, in a city, to get back in contact with some of his musical folks, because I would like to have us put together, like, a jazz band in which we would front, and he could do his trumpet and keyboards, and I could just stand there and sing and look pretty, because that's all I can do.
That's all you need to do.
We have been talking about it. I want to spend a little money to upgrade some of the gear that I have. It's some of the gear got really destroyed throughout the years.
Yeah.
I'd actually like to sold like a jazz album of my own just to get some standards recorded, you know. And he's a fabulous arranger, so.
So, Will, you know, we have talked about it. It is in the works. I just started this new job in February. And so it's been an adjustment, me being the lonely contractor, going from sometimes you'd have, you know, 10 to 12 hour days. Sometimes you've had 2 hour days. Sometimes you've had,
3 days off. Yeah.
3 days off. And so trying to just adjust to a schedule, it doesn't sound like it should be that difficult, but.
Oh, I know how it goes. And certainly remember those years of, you know, there just not being much time for extra things, but the music has been a great thing for us as a family, just to have something that we all love to do together. And, you know, you can kind of step into that and take a break from whatever else you're struggling with. And it's a really neat thing. So hopefully at some point you all will really get around to doing some of that.
Yeah, well,
I'm gonna make sure it happens.
I think it will, you know. But it is kind of like one of those things that the timing has to be right, and you can't push a river. You know, it has to sort of unfold on its own.
But I can take the stuff off the piano.
You can.
That's true.
You can do that. Yes, you can. You certainly can push the river that much.
Yeah.
Well, this has really been fun, you all, just to reminisce a bit and get a little more of the true Hartley story here. And I think people will enjoy hearing about you guys getting together and a little bit about what you do, Jeremy. And so thank you so much for your willingness to take some time to come on and talk with us a bit.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you again for having me. As Allison will attest, I'm kind of as much into technology as I am. I don't really respond to a lot of email lists, and I'm not even on Twitter at this point. So
yeah.
It's just one of those things. I get done with working on a computer during the course of a day, and I just want to have a little fun with it. I don't want to be roped into anything. So
I don't blame you.
I'm kind of the nameless husband right now, because he always refers to me on Twitter, and everyone says, "Well, does he really exist?"
No, you have been featured on several prominent audio booths now, so everyone knows that you exist.
For a while there, I don't think anybody knew that I existed, because
you were like Santa Claus.
Well, we'll help dispel that myth.
You're right.
that you are a real alive person, really a lot of pleasure to have you on here, and it's been fun to talk with you. So I'm glad.
Yeah. No problem. This has been fun, and I heard that you guys did an interview a little bit earlier, and so you're cooking right along here. So this is great.
This has been a marathon podcast weekend. It's been fun.
It really has. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this, and if you have comments you'd like to make about any of these topics that we've touched on here, feel free to drop us an email at techdoctor@drcarter.com. That's techdoctor, all one word, @dr-carter.com. And until we come together again next time, this is Robert the Tech Doctor saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley. Bye, everyone.